Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey folks, today's show is brought to you in part by Omaha Steaks. If this 2020 holiday season feels like it's been a long time coming, make it worth the wait with Omaha Steaks. Omaha Steaks makes the perfect gift for family and friends or to treat yourself, all shipped directly to your door. They offer everything you need to bring families together for a delicious holiday feast. Their deluxe griller's assortment package includes a variety of entrees, sides, and desserts. And right now you can get this mouth-watering package plus 4 free burgers and a free digital meat thermometer at an exclusive price only available to my listeners. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter the code VOICES into the search bar, get a jump on gift shopping with Omaha Steaks. Omaha Steaks isn't just steak, it's a fantastic gift and a safe way to share the joy of the season with Omaha Steaks' guaranteed quality and safety with every order. Order the Deluxe Griller's Assortment Package today and you'll get 4 free Omaha Steaks burgers and a free digital meat thermometer when you go to omahasteaks.com and type VOICES in the search bar. That's omahasteaks.com and type VOICES in the search bar to shop the best gourmet gifts of the season. And now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Zeska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, November 18, 2020, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Zeska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. My guest today needs no introduction, but I'm going to do it anyway. The great Marcos Melitzis, the founder of DailyCoast.com, is here today, and I couldn't be more excited to chat with him about everything that's going on right now. Marcos and his legendary blog are American political institutions, still going strong 18 years after it first launched. Today, we're going to talk about what's next for elections and Trumpism as we move into the Biden administration. Plus, Marcos is going to reveal some of his dirty secrets, as well as his theory about the deplorables and a whole lot more. And if you like what you hear today, don't forget to subscribe to our bonus content at BobZeskaShow.com. Okay, let's talk with living legend, Marcos Melitzis. We're going to talk about the election in a second, but first, some brown nosing before we get started. One of the reasons I'm a politics writer and podcast right now is because of you and Daily Kos. It was, still is, the gold standard. 18 years since its founding, and it's still at the top of the heap. It absolutely speaks to your leadership and foresight. Are you still involved day to day? What's happening over there?
And first of all, thanks so much for all that. That's very kind of you to say, and I truly do appreciate it. I am, you know, given our legal structure, I'm the managing partner of the company. Mm-hmm. I stepped down from day-to-day operations at the beginning of this year, actually.
Yeah.
So the company just grew too big, and I'm a startup guy. I'm not a developed policy for, you know, for bereavement policies kind of meetings. And so turn it over to people who are more capable on managing a company that now has about 90 employees.
Unbelievable. 90. That's incredible.
Yeah, 90. And then it allowed me to focus, to go back and focus more on writing and working with the editorial department on sort of shaping coverage and narratives, yeah, and that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, given the fact that you're not as involved with the actual running of the site, it's really kept up the spirit of how it got started, the spirit of what you launched. I mean, again, 18 years ago, it's an astoundingly long run, given the fact that so many platforms come and go, so many blogs, so many voices come and go, you know, just in the unbelievable changeover that is internet time. I mean, what do you attribute to its longevity as a site?
So I think 100% the community, and Daily Coast is very much a grassroots-driven site. We do have an editorial department, obviously. We have a news staff, but over half our content comes from just grassroots activists. And so it's probably, I would say, there aren't a lot of other outlets that really cater specifically to the super liberal activist. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the challenges we've had is how do we expand beyond that? How do we become more mass mainstream? Because even the way we write, a lot of it is just, it assumes a certain level of political acumen and knowledge, right? That just, so that's sort of been the challenge. And I haven't cracked it. Like, we haven't cracked that code. But as far as the spirit, and, you know, I'm engaged, right? And the fact that I'm really sort of active with the editorial crew means that I'm specifically talking to the people that are outward facing the world. And so that's what people see. So when you talk about running a company that size, you know, you have a technology team and you have human resources and you have our activism team and admin. And so there's a day-to-day sort of the mechanics of running a company that large are actually much deeper than how are we going to treat Donald Trump's refusal to leave office moving forward. And so I was able to sort of step away from doing that the day to day on the mechanics of running a company, which is really honestly not my strong suit, and more focus on the editorial narrative storytelling side, which I actually think I'm okay at.
Yeah, it's quite incredible knowing that Daily Coast was also one of the sites, one of the first blogs to develop a community vertical where you've got community participation, where people who read the site started their own blogs on the site in the community section. And from what I recall, going back to Blogosphere 1.0, that was innovative at the time. I mean, that you guys were one of the first to do that, weren't you?
In the political space, I'm pretty sure we were the first. I actually, this is a sort of little dirty secret that I should keep my mouth shut and tell people, but I do anyway. Because I could play off as like, yeah, that was my innovation. I was so smart. I saw that coming. No, you know what happened is that there was this like a blogging platform. I had basically outgrown Blogspot at the time. And so I needed something else. And there was a blogging platform called Kuroshin, which was just a technology, sort of Reddit, you know, like they died off, Reddit exploded, but it was sort of Reddit-esque. So I adopted it, and it had these things called diaries, right? And it was for, because it was very much, it wasn't meant to be an individual, it was meant to be a group community effort. And so when I put this thing together, I looked at that thing. I'm like, oh, you know, that thing, I need to get that off there. But I didn't know how.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll worry about that later. And within like 30 minutes of me shifting over to this new version of the site, like people started using those diaries and writing. And I was like, I guess I shouldn't get rid of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a happy mistake. It's like the discovery of penicillin. You are working on something else and oh my God, this actually works. This is groundbreaking.
Now to give myself some credit, like I immediately saw like, oh wait, this is what's really interesting about the site. It's not what I write. Mm-hmm. It's about bringing in all this other expertise, because I found out really quickly that no matter what I wrote about, there was always somebody out there that was smarter about that topic than I was. And instead of being threatened or annoyed by that, that became sort of the guiding ethos of Daily Coast. It's like, let's really tap into that expertise and knowledge from people that normally don't have access to any sort of media platform. They don't have a voice that's been dominated by cable news or, you know, the, you know, New York Times columnists or whatever, the people right. who used to be the gatekeepers of public discourse.
Right. And you were able to expand Daily Kos into what at the time was called Yearly Kos, which eventually went on to become Netroots Nation, which has become its own separate, like, colossal event every year. I mean, I attended the Netroots convention in 2015 in Phoenix, and I was totally blown away by the size and scope of it, the attendance of it. Did you ever expect in your wildest dreams that such an ambitious endeavor, like having an annual convention like that, would have this kind of staying power?
Oh, no, absolutely not. And that actually, Yearly Kos is a testament to that ethos I just talked about. Yeah. I had no role in planning it, zero.
Wow.
And in fact, it was originally called Yearly Kos, and I asked them to change it because I was getting all the credit for something that I really didn't deserve.
See, that's big of you. That's great.
What I did do, yeah, my marketing people really don't like me sometimes. But what I did do is I gave him permission to use a name. Mm-hmm. So I took a risk, right? Because you don't know what's going to come out of the other side, right? But they seemed like they knew what they were doing, and I was like, I hope they don't embarrass me. And then I offered some early seed funding, and it wasn't a lot of money because back then we didn't have a lot of money, period.
Yeah.
So everything was very shoestring, but I did offer something so they had something to work with from the beginning, and. But yeah, it was community organized. They came up with the idea. They put together the team. They organized it. And they're the ones that ended up professionalizing the conference and pushing it to where it's at today. And so for the longest time, yeah, like I said, I was getting credit for something that I had very minimal. Now, if you want to give me credit for creating a platform that brought these people together to do something cool, then yeah, sure. But I was getting credit for way more than that.
Right.
And but this is what I love. I mean, Nate Silver came out of the Daily Kos community. A lot of people don't realize that.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of existing sort of, you know, high level activists that came out of the Daily Kos community. It is really has helped shape a sort of a generation of progressive activists, and I'm really proud of that.
Yeah.
And. And yeah, no, like you said, it's been 18 years, and sometimes that sort of blows my mind because back then I remember being in those like 30 under 30 lists.
That's right. Well, there was something that was so awesome about Blogosphere 1.0, that first group of liberal blogs that emerged during the George W. Bush administration, especially during the first term, post-invasion of Iraq and so on. And you were kind of, Daily Kos was 2002, so that was kind of in the midst of all of that, the insanity around the 2002 midterms and so on, and a lot of the attacks, immensely unfair, kind of pre-Trump, proto-Trump-style attacks on Democrats at the time for not supporting the invasion of Iraq and so on. And there was this whole community, even beyond Daily Kos, of other blogs. But now it seems like social media has kind of taken that space a little bit. I'm interested to know your views on that in terms of whether blogs and group blogs will ever come back as a purely dominant force in communication online, or whether it's social media moving forward. I, of course, much prefer the blogosphere as a platform. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's there's no doubt that all the energy and action is in the social media sites and Twitter and Facebook, and TikTok is now emerging. And I think a lot of it is just, it's that low bar of entry, right? I mean, if you show up at Daily Kos and you don't know what the filibuster is, I mean, half the stories stop making sense, right? Because it's not a sensical, you know, it's just not even a construct that makes logical sense in any meaning of the equation, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a funny word on top of everything else. So, and that's where, if you know, we've sort of struggled. Do we dumb it down? Is not the right word, right? But do we do more explainers? But then that sort of alienates the existing crowd that's there because they do understand this stuff and they want to discuss it at greater length. And to me, I'm actually surprised. I mean, we're still growing organically. I'm so surprised that Daily Kos has the staying power it has despite Twitter.
Yeah.
And despite Facebook, because they sucked a lot of what could have been sort of our people that could have helped grow our audience. But even then, Daily Coast is still it's from number of people that sign up, number of people that comment and stuff. It's still a growing number. Traffic wise, we're not at our heyday. Traffic wise was there was a time before 2016 where Facebook didn't cut off all the liberal sites, and maybe we talked about this before. And so we were definitely affected by this. I know Mother Jones has been really active, vocal about it. We sort of just kind of shrugged our shoulders and said, you know, that sucks, and put our energy elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you know, we're growing despite that, and it's always going to be a challenge. But we're very hyper political, and we're very smart and very engaged, and people do stuff. Our email list has like 6 million people on it. And we consistently drive the largest number of email list signups for presidential candidates, Senate candidates, you know, progressive organizations. So we're very much, I think, a hub of a progressive the progressive movement. We raised this cycle over $10 million for Democratic candidates and allied organizations. And so we're very active and engaged and still very much a force, despite that social media stuff. Now, what happens with social media? I think stuff comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, TikTok is the new kid in town, and some of the other ones, Snapchat, are sort of fading away. I mean, stuff comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
I like to, in my ideal world, Daily Coast remains that hub for progressives who really want to work to change our country. It's probably not going to be the place for casual political observers or people who just check in on an election every couple of years. But those who live and breathe Democratic liberal politics and are really doing the day-to-day fight for our progressive future, I think Daily Coast really is that place.
Yeah, it's an institution now. But going back to what you're saying about Facebook, that was a huge kind of watershed moment when Facebook decided, while also kind of replacing blogs as a platform for people to talk about politics, it also pulled the rug out from a lot of blogs when it changed its algorithm sometime around 2013. That's when I remember it happening. And it was devastating to blog after blog after blog, because now Facebook, which had been a source of traffic, was now throttling all outgoing traffic to blogs. It's something that still you see today. How did you guys power through all of that?
So I would actually say that that was the final straw for a lot of media organizations.
Yeah.
And the first one is Google AdWords back in 2009, where basically before that, publishers were getting maybe $20 per 1,000 page views from advertisers. And then Google AdWords came in and it became 35 cents just overnight. I mean, that's the story of how we survived 2009 is a good story. I didn't pay myself for about a year and a half. You know, it was a much smaller staff. People took, you know, salary cuts. I mean, we that was where we struggled. But that also, you know what it did for Daily Coast. And one thing I am incredibly grateful for is that we have some really innovative people on staff. And that's when we really started working on our email list and developing our own sort of audience-supported model. So when you talk about the traffic drop, you know, a lot of organizations, like I think the Mother Jones, they depended on that traffic for a big part of the revenue. And that's why losing that traffic really hurt, because the fact is, the reality is, a lot of the traffic was garbage traffic, right? It's clickbaity headlines, and people come in and you have what's called bounce rates, where people come in, they look at that, you know, they just take a quick look, and not even a second later, they're gone.
Yeah.
It still counts as a visit, but is it really a visit? And so for Daily Coast, where our goal is organizing and getting people actively engaged in campaigns, that was utterly worthless.
Mm-hmm.
And since we were so strongly supported by our audience, by our own community, we didn't depend on that revenue as much as other people did. So yeah, it hurt us on the revenue side, but again, it was garbage traffic. It didn't really fulfill our mission. Now, I have no doubt that maybe of all that traffic that we were getting from Facebook, and it was tens of millions of monthly visitors. So it was real. I have no doubt that maybe a small percentage of those people maybe came back. So as a recruiting tool, it probably had some value. But from a financial standpoint, it didn't really kill us. From a mission standpoint, I mean, almost almost no effect. But if you're a traditional media organization like Mother Jones, I mean, they're just media, right? They're just providing stories, and they need those page views. I could see how in a lot of media organizations that suffered first from the Google AdWord hit and then from Facebook sort of dealing the knockout blow. I could see how that was tough. And I just, again, I lucked into so much. I'm so incredibly blessed that I surround myself with really smart people. And they saw that advertising was a dangerous model to depend on. And definitely trying to build audience on Facebook was a dangerous model because, you know, we've seen many a company destroyed by Facebook's changing whims and priorities. And so they focus on how do we motivate our own community to support the work that we do. And a lot of that is just providing a service that they value enough to want to support it. And so at this point, the bulk of our revenue, I think, comes from community support. And that inoculates us quite a bit from some of these wider trends.
Yeah, you were saying in 2009 that you guys were struggling a bit because of AdWords. And the great irony of 2009 is you and the site itself were so instrumental in helping Barack Obama win in 2008. And right on the heels of that, you end up hitting this giant pothole in the road toward, you know, getting to 18 years and beyond. Was that clear to you at the time? Like, wow, man, we did all of this. We went through all of this to get this guy elected, and we're grateful for that. We're happy that he's here. But why the hell are we now struggling? How did that happen? How did we go from being so instrumental to a major political campaign? I mean, a groundbreaking historic campaign to, you know, trying to fight through, you know, a major hiccup in a revenue stream and traffic stream and so on.
So I'm here just sharing a lot of little dirty secrets. And here's another dirty secret is that if you are partisan press, you do a lot better when you're in the opposition. So Fox News trying to get rid of Donald Trump right now, I have no doubt that they're like, they're just itching at, you know, sort of reorienting themselves again as an opposition and using it as a rallying point against, you know, scary Joe Biden liberals. And so what happened in 2009 is that liberals, we won the White House. We had briefly super majorities in the Senate and big majorities in the House. And liberals said, all right, our job is done. Now we can focus on things that are more fun. And they walked away from politics, right? And 2010 happened, and that screwed us for an entire decade. And in fact, that is almost directly related to Donald Trump being elected, because we lost governorships in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and they changed the law to make it more restrictive and harder for people to vote in those states. And lo and behold, that's where Donald Trump won the election. So all of that is of a piece, and all of it's related, and it's all rooted in 2010, and liberals sort of staying home and one is the sense of mission accomplished, we're done. And two was the sense of, oh, you know, Obama didn't deliver on this promise, he didn't deliver on that promise, and so therefore I'm angry and pissed and I'm not going to participate. And that gave us Donald Trump, right? And so there was a lot of, you know, when we were looking ahead at budgets and stuff for 2021, one of our concerns is don't grow too fast right now. You know, the going's pretty good because Donald Trump is a fundraising bonanza for liberal organizations. But 2021 may be different, right? So that put, you know, that didn't force us. I mean, we made a decision. That's better. We made a decision to be very prudent in managing our resources, because we aren't particularly 100% sure that that liberals haven't learned that lesson from 2010, and that if we won everything, that everybody would sort of just, again, walk away with mission accomplished. Now, of course, we didn't get that, right? We didn't get that because at best we're going to have a 50-50 Senate, and that'll be a ton of drama, and we still have a pandemic, and there's still so much. So maybe we won't get the drop off that we would have gotten maybe if everybody had won. But I also think that liberals we're getting smarter. We're definitely getting smarter. We saw that in the turnout for the Supreme Court judicial race in Wisconsin back in, I think it was April. You know, these races scheduled in the middle of the year because Republicans knew that liberals wouldn't turn out for them, and it was a sort of institutional advantage. And one, like, we crushed them on turnout. People are finally starting to realize that the presidency isn't the be-all, end-all of improving the country.
Right.
And there's been a lot more focus on down ballot races and that sort of thing. So again, maybe things are different, but we can't assume that, right? And when you're running a business and you have 90 employees, you have to make decisions that are that does protect those, you know, those employees. Because it is a responsibility. It's a challenge, right? Knowing yeah. that people's livelihoods depend on you. In addition to that broader mission, which is changing, you know, moving the country to a more progressive place. So, again, that's why one reason I think I actually step back from those decisions, because I actually am very aggressive, and I would be more likely to bankrupt the organization if I had my whims. And so it's better to have people who are prudent that can actually look ahead beyond whatever impulses to do something cool in the moment that I may have.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up 2010 too, because I'm deeply concerned about 2022 coming up, because I'm afraid exactly the same fear that we kind of experienced in 2010, people checking out. People just like, I'm so done with dealing with Donald Trump. I'm so done dealing with Mitch McConnell. Just fuck this for a while. We're just going to back away and not participate. And then suddenly, man, we've got a 2022 midterm in which, you know, more QAnon people are flooding into Congress potentially. Who knows what else what other nightmare would occur? And in fact, the Republicans seem to be getting closer and closer to taking over the House of Representatives because of what happened with the down ballot races in this past election, where it's, you know, yeah. the margin has narrowed significantly there and put it a little bit more in reach for Republicans. So there's a really serious concern about more liberals checking out again. But you seem to say that that may not be the case. Like, the circumstances have changed enough since 2010 to maybe not affect us as badly in 2022, right?
What I'm saying is, I mean, that may still happen. What I'm saying is that I'm not assuming that's going to happen anymore. Because, you know, after 2010, I was just like, well, we're going to lose every. From a business standpoint, liberals are going to check out after a big victory because we don't focus on down ballot. I think that's different now. And I mean, part of it is just Biden's going to have to deliver, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to have to use executive power and his controlled agencies to do things like $50,000, forgiving $50,000 of education debt, a federally backed education debt for students. Things like that, he needs to deliver. But Bob, the House is even scarier for 2022. It's not even just drop off. Republicans were able to maintain control in most of the states that will the district drawing power in most of the key states. In fact, they will draw five times as many seats as Democrats will.
Jesus.
That's how bleak it is. And there was some checks on those Republican drawing districts, like in places like in Texas and North Carolina, because of Voting Rights Act stuff. Now with that 6-3 Supreme Court majority, there's almost no chance that we can use the courts to block their basically going to be racist maps.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have free reign to draw the most, you know, the ugliest, most advantageous gerrymanders for themselves. So it's the House is actually in serious danger.
Jesus.
And so this was not a good time. And I gotta say, this was in 2010 was our fault. Like, liberals just didn't turn out.
Right.
Liberals turned out this time. They did. So we actually maximized it. It's just the problem was that we were still operating under those 2010 maps. And so they were able, Trump got out the rural vote in numbers enough to maintain their state legislative majorities in a lot of these key places like Florida and Texas and North Carolina and Arizona and even Minnesota. So that has been we're still suffering from the aftershocks of 2010, and it's frustrating. So it makes our job harder, and we already have a Senate that's not representative of the nation, right? I mean, the Dakotas have four seats, as many seats in the Senate as Texas and California do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the hope was, if we got a solid Senate majority, then we can push for D.C. and Puerto Rico statehood, start to address some of those inequalities in the Senate. Those dreams are probably dead, even if we get a 50-50 Senate now. So this is going to be a challenging several years. And I'm hoping that liberals don't treat this as like, oh, we did all this work to get rid of Trump and you know, I'm too tired. It didn't really work. And I'm hoping that we see this as an opportunity to like, okay, it's just the next step in this long running battle. Because in the end, the reality is that their electorate is dying off and ours is coming of age.
That's right.
I mean, demographics are still heading our direction. Texas is still coming our way. Georgia came our way. Arizona. Things are realigning. We're losing white people. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Minnesota turn red in the next 20 years.
Wow.
But we have a whole new coalition of states that we can build our R base on. And we, I mean, we have no choice. We have to do it.
Okay, we'll get back to our conversation with Marcos here in just 1 second. But each year, you want to find special gifts to give family and friends, but it can be a challenge to find something unique. But with bestfamilygifts.com, you can get custom canvas prints for a truly one-of-a-kind gift. Choose from one of the beautiful prints from bestfamilygifts.com, add the names of the special people in your life, and bestfamilygifts.com customizes your chosen print. Imagine glorious ocean sunsets, autumnal forests, or classy black and white vistas. See the collection for yourself at bestfamilygifts.com. You can personalize the text of each print with the names of the people you love, including family, friends, or even your pets. These really are the perfect gifts for family and friends. Anyone can get regular canvas framed artwork, but who can say they have custom artwork specifically personalized for them? Go to bestfamilygifts.com to see the entire amazing collection of custom canvas prints for yourself and get a 20% discount on your first order with promo code Stephanie. That's bestfamilygifts.com. Remember to use the promo code Stephanie for 20% off your first order. Bestfamilygifts.com, code Stephanie. And the season of giving is upon us. The special day of turkey, family, and football will be here before you know it. Before gathering with your family to share in your Thanksgiving traditions, make sure to be careful. It's important to allow some extra time for you, the time you need to take care of yourself and to look your best for your loved ones. With Plexiderm, all you need is 10 minutes and you can look 10 years younger. Plexiderm is a clinically studied serum that gives your appearance the right kind of changes, visibly reduce wrinkles, fine lines, and even under eye bags in just minutes. You can try a 6-application trial pack for just $14.95 with free shipping when you visit buyplx.com/sexyliberal or call 800-685-1292 and say sexy liberal. This order also comes with free shipping and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Make those wrinkles, lines, and under-eye bags disappear with Plexiderm. Visit buyplx.com/sexyliberal or call 800-685-1292 and say the code sexyliberal at checkout. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
Do you think the Republic recovers from the Trump damage, or are we going to constantly have to push back against fascist idiocracy? It seems like that's our future now. Like, we constantly have to be mindful of these red hat zombies pounding at the door, waiting to come back in. And the moment we let our guard down, in they come. And yet another nightmare occurs, another Trump style nightmare. Is that something that you're seeing in our future, or are you seeing a rosier picture of what's ahead?
No, I think it's scary out there. And the next Trump may be smarter, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine a smart Trump. I mean, we were... Trump, we got lucky in that Trump basically spelled out his plan for Pennsylvania, right? To try to invalidate all post. He kept his mouth shut. Democrats may have procrastinated more in Philadelphia. In the end, I think it was like 500 Philadelphia voters, you know, ballots came in after the deadline, after Election Day, because people were scared enough by Trump's own words to vote early.
Yeah.
And so what if we had somebody who was smarter than Trump? That's scary. And one of the things I was hoping for, if we had a solid Senate majority, is to start rebuilding the institutions in a way that can't be undermined this way. Because we just found out that our institutions aren't resilient. Like, they cannot stand in the face of somebody who doesn't respect norms and traditions and that sort of thing. Right? You have to spell this stuff out. You have to create an ironclad independent Justice Department. You have to make it mandatory that executive branch officials testify in Congress if they're subpoenaed, and that there are actual consequences if they don't show up. Things like tax returns, obviously, like low-hanging fruit. All those things need to happen. Now, I'm not sure we can do that to make that happen. I'm developing this theory, and it's very nascent, and it could very much change based on data that continues to come in from the election. But I'm calling them the hidden deplorables. And believe, if you look at the polling in 2014 and 2018, the polling was fine.
Mm-hmm.
It was off in 2016 and 20. It undercounted Donald Trump's support. And so there was this sort of notion from some of the right-wing pollsters. They were calling it the shy Trump voter, right? And there's not a single Trump supporter who's shy. Like, no, that's not what it is. And actually, yeah. I have a theory, right? And my theory is that these are actually, they live in meth country, and there is correlation between how high a county has a meth addiction and how strongly they voted for Donald Trump.
Interesting.
The more economically disadvantaged a county, the stronger the support for Donald Trump. And these are places that are actually kind of shitholes, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are corporations pulled out. They left the factories. Everything's rusted out. All the young people are leaving. There's no economic opportunities. All you have left is sort of economic misery and meth. And these are people that have lost all faith in government because, you know, government didn't bail them out. They've lost faith in media because they're not represented. They've lost faith in all institutions. So they're not the people, they're not going to talk to a pollster, right? They're going to give the pollster a middle finger,
yeah.
right? And tell them to F off. They're the people that are trying to run a Biden bus off the road in Texas,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, they're destructive. And we saw Kerry Loeffler, who's an incumbent senator in Georgia, in a runoff. She fended off a right-wing challenge with an ad where she said that she was more conservative than Attila the Hun. Now, what's Attila the Hun known for? What, is there a Hun civilization? We could go see some ruins from the Hun? Some Hun culture? No, they destroyed.
Yeah.
Right? They raped, pillaged, destroyed, and then extorted the Roman Empire into near insolvency just out of fear, right? Based corruption, violence and corruption.
Yeah.
And so these are people that aren't responding to policy. You can't policy. It's not economic insecurity.
Mm.
They just lost faith in everybody. So they see Donald Trump and he's just blowing stuff up.
Yeah.
And they love that because their lives are crap. They want to drag everybody else down with them. So when you hear them say, like, you know, they get so excited when, you know, they own the libs, right?
Yeah,
and
it's
not even about like making their lives better. It's about dragging everybody else down to their level. And so Donald Trump got 10 million more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016. And it wasn't because of his great command of policy or his accomplishments. It's because he was blowing stuff up and blowing up the media and blowing up government. And these people were there for that. That's what they were there for. They didn't turn out for the Republican Party. They have no trust for the Republican Party. They don't care about the Republican Party. They did not turn out in 2018 or 2019 when Democrats won governorships in Louisiana and Kentucky, obviously blood red states. And Trump was begging them. I don't know if you remember. He literally said, you need to deliver a victory for me or they're going to say, or this is going to look bad for me.
Mm-hmm.
And Democrats won those blood red states. So my theory is that these hidden deplorables only come out for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And they don't come out. So if that's true, we'll find out in January. And we're not counting on it. Do not count. Do not. This is not a prediction. But if Republican turnout is significantly lower in Georgia in January, here's my favorite fact from this election. Donald Trump got 390,000 more votes in Georgia in 2020 than he did in 2016, winning Jesus. By 5%, right? By any stretch of the imagination, he should have won, right? He won by five. He added an extra 390 million. 360 million. 360 million. Joe Biden added 590 million votes from Hillary Clinton's total in Georgia in just 4 years. And of course, I'm not saying it was Joe Biden, right? It was Stacey Abrams and that army of volunteers and allied organizations in Georgia doing all that incredible work to register people and turn them out. But those are 360,000 people that turned out just for Donald Trump. And will they turn out for the primary and for the runoff election in January? And if they do, then I think we're in for a rough 2022.
It's terrifying to me, Marcos, the fact that Donald Trump was able to have the record that he had. And just by screaming into the void every damn day, he was able to supersede all of those disasters, all of that incompetence. It seems like the same thing can't really happen on the Democratic side. You're never going to have I mean, that's the frustrating thing. I mean, they could just, it doesn't matter what the Republican record is, as long as they're screaming and making up. I have this theory myself that Donald Trump could stand up in front of his rally crowds and say, I'm offering every man, woman, and child in America a jetpack made of beef. And they will all go, yay, we're all getting jetpacks made of beef. Four more years. And it's nonsense. It doesn't exist. It'll never happen. But it doesn't matter that it's never going to happen. He has just merely said it's going to happen. You can't do that sort of thing on the Democratic side. So it seems like through no fault of our own, we're at a disadvantage in terms of the politics that we're looking at moving forward. Are you seeing this, the same thing, the same kind of dynamic?
Yeah, well, we don't reward incompetence.
Yeah.
I mean, number one.
Right.
We don't appeal. I mean, when you talk about these economic downtrodden people in mm-hmm. that country, right? I mean, you can see why a message that says, oh, those black people in the cities are getting sweet, sweet government checks, right? They're getting their Obama phones. And they're getting free food, mm-hmm. and you ain't got crap. Like, that's the message. That's the racist message that appeals so well to people who really, I mean, generally don't have anything, and quite frankly, are better suited for you know, would better benefit under Democratic policies. You know, mm-hmm. nothing else. They got health care.
Yep.
Instead, you know, Trump destroyed trade with China, and Iowa farmers just kept throwing billions of dollars at them to try to buy him off to keep him happy because he'd so botched the trade war with China.
Mm-hmm.
They don't expect their lives to get better. So it really has come down to how do you drag down liberals down to their level of misery?
Yeah.
That it's really what it's come down to. And obviously Democrats, we have to, we have to deliver. Our base isn't happy. We saw that in 2010 where people were upset at Obama for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were legitimate reasons. I'm not an Obama apologist, and I definitely think he could have done things differently, not been so eager to try to get bipartisan buy-in on the ACA.
Yep.
But in the end, you know, if we don't feel that we benefited, then we tune out from just sort of disenchantment in the system. We're not motivated by like, oh, you know, let's drag some conservatives. Like, that's not our world. I mean, conservatives have to buy conservative books. Like, liberals don't buy liberal books. Liberals buy books.
Mm-hmm,
they buy
right.
fiction. They buy whatever entertains them, right? We don't need to have our ideology validated. It does require. That's why, you know, I said earlier that Biden has to deliver. And David Dayen over at the American Prospect has had a great series on the Day One Agenda. He calls it. And these are things that that Biden can do with his agency power. Not even executive orders. I mean, that's a whole other thing he can do with executive orders.
Yeah.
But just by running various departments, you have a great deal of power. It doesn't require new laws. It just requires prioritizing and focusing on things that are allowed under the law. And so he's been digging into laws at the Department of Labor and Education and places like that. And what could Biden's executive team do, his cabinet secretaries, what could they do to deliver real results to Americans without having to run the gauntlet of the Senate? And there's a lot.
Yeah.
There's actually quite a bit, and it really just comes down to, is he okay with the inevitable Fox News freak out about mm-hmm. Dictator powers again from the same people that have excused all manners of executive abuses from Trump? This is not even getting into executive orders. This is just using the power that's already inherently allowed by the law,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of it is stretching. You have to stretch it, right? So
yeah.
One of the things that he talks about is that there is a law that gave Medicare for all for a town in Montana, that suffered an environmental catastrophe. Mm-hmm. And so the law says if you suffer an environmental catastrophe, you can expand the you know, Medicare to people under the age of whatever it is now, 65. Well, I mean, so declare the climate crisis an environmental catastrophe, and boom, you can ask the whole nation, right?
Yeah, like, seriously.
It requires some creative. And, of course, it's the Supreme Court, and it's going to be hostile. But at least show that you're trying. Do these things. Enforce Republicans to have to defend a system that really works against people. That, I think, is critical.
Right, right.
And then I think we have a chance.
So how do you feel about prosecuting these bastards after January 20th? I mean, is it even possible without damaging Biden's efforts to kind of stay above it all? I mean, is there a way to thread that needle to get through that?
I'm really counting on New York State to come through.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, Trump, he's obviously going to pardon everybody retroactively. So I'm not sure. I do think we do need, you know, Congress does need to do some investigating, because we need to set some markers for the next, you know, the next fascist that comes along and tries to subvert our democracy. But as far as the Trumps themselves, I think New York has a lot of material to work with, and there's a lot of good careers to be made. I mean, whoever takes down Trump in New York is going to be a senator and maybe a president. So I think people that are properly motivated to do justice in this case. And I actually think that there should be a totally independent Justice Department, and Biden doesn't get a say. You know, once he appoints his people, it's up to the new attorney general to decide how and where and what to focus on. And yeah, people are going to blame it on Biden if this person decides to go after the Trump administration. But there does need to be, I mean, things like Alan DeJoy at the U.S. Postal Service needs to be prosecuted for voter tampering voter suppression. Mm-hmm. That's a no-brainer. That was beyond the pale. Kids in cages, that becomes, from a legal, you know, from a criminal legal standpoint, becomes a little more difficult. Definitely needs to be probed. Safeguards need to be, at least there needs to be an effort to try to create safeguards and laws to sort of rein that kind of abuse in. And some of this stuff maybe Republicans might even be interested in, especially if you only have to peel away a couple of them, you know, the Romney, Murkowski, Collins crew. And because Democrats may hold the White House for a while. I mean, if we can lock down Texas, and Texas is moving in our direction demographically, if we can lock down Texas, Republicans are going to have a hard time winning the White House. And at that point, do they really want to have a unfettered executive if Democrats are holding that office for a long time? So maybe they might be properly motivated to create some restrictions on future administrations, regardless of party.
Yeah, it seems like they're going to go bananas no matter what happens. That's my view. I mean, I'm sure, you know, you recall 2009 through early 2017, when it didn't matter what Barack Obama did or didn't do. They just still went indiscriminately nuts for that entire time, whether it was the Tea Party or the rise of Donald Trump toward the end. It was bananas. So it seems to me as if pushing forward, powering through that, taking a strong posture on, you know, whether it's state level prosecutions, congressional investigations, and so on, I think it's absolutely mandatory. And meanwhile, it looks like the future of the GOP is in the hands of morons like Dan Bongino, Charlie Kirk, Candace Owens, whoever Q might be. I still think it's like Andy Kaufman somewhere pranking people. I mean, this should mean easy wins for Democrats, right? But Idiocracy, we've discovered through great pain over the last 4 years, is an easy sell here. I mean, why were Trump and his henchmen so successful at duping so many people? As you said, 10 million more people than who voted for him in 2016. How was that possible?
Yeah. Like I said, I think it goes back to these hidden deplorables. Yeah. I think they really appreciated their lives suck.
Yeah.
I mean, all the economically vibrant places, all the educated places. So out of the top half of educated states, of the top 25 most educated states by college degree, only two are Republican, Kansas and Utah. And Utah's Republican for religious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
That really that leaves Kansas. And Kansas it's trending our direction, but it's too white, right? And Kansas City is on the wrong side of the border. I wish Kansas could get Kansas City, because Missouri using it, right? And so it makes it a little more difficult. But of the 25 most educated states, only two are red. And of the if you flip it, I think it's of the top of the lowest 22 most uneducated states, or least educated states, is a better way to put it. Only two are Democratic, and that's New Mexico and Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
So the education is a big piece. And so you're going to continue to see Republicans attack higher ed, right, because they see that as an existential threat. It's the breeding ground for smart people, and that means Democrats. And but so you're not educated. Your job prospects suck.
Mm-hmm.
Your town is dying. Because, you know, all the youth are leaving the cities. They're all going to Atlanta and Chicago and Austin and cool places, California, New York. There's no economic prospects. The corporations are long gone. And even now, agriculturally, thanks to Trump, you know, China's now buying from Brazil. You know, it's mm-hmm. soybean from Brazil. And even that may be a long-term challenge moving forward. So everything sucks. And so you vote for the guy who's there to just give voice to that rage. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And so you see people talking about, oh, Democrats, you know, activists shouldn't have talked about defund the police, or they shouldn't have done this or that. None of that matters. There's always going to be something. In 2016, it was Honduran caravans.
Yeah.
In 2018, it was Salvadoran MS-13 gang members. They're always going to find a way to point to scary black people and brown people. And really tickle. And you know, I've written that Donald Trump has this amazing power to tickle the lizard brain of white America.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're educated, you can reject it. And that's what we've seen in the suburbs, and particularly women. But if you're a white male, apparently it's like a, you know, a moth to flame.
Yeah, it is.
Can't resist it.
Oh, shit, yeah. Where do you land on the Never Trumpers, the Lincoln Project guys? Is there a place for them in the Democratic coalition?
No, not in the Democratic coalition. If there's a place in the Democracy coalition, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, 100%. If you, you know, they want to help us restore American democracy, and I mean, and then they can be anti-taxes and all that other crap, right? I think to their credit, they're not really asking for anything. They're not asking for influence.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm afraid Biden might feel compelled to, you know, his instincts for bipartisanship might hurt. But they're not. They don't seem to be asking for anything. So, yeah, I think for democracy purposes, I'd love to see. I mean, people disagree, right? We're going to disagree on core issues. So let's have parties and let's have a honest argument about whether this country needs more regulations or not. Does it need more taxes or not? Great. Let's have that debate. Obviously, there's no debate. And like I said, I mean, Trump has there's no ideology. They didn't even bother coming up with a platform this year.
Right.
They couldn't even be bothered to come up with a platform because that would be building something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't build. They destroy. That's all they do is destroy.
Yeah.
And that's why you got that many votes, because people are so, their life sucks so bad that they want to see other people also destroyed.
Yeah, it seems like now the thrust of the Republican Party, the agenda of the Republican Party, is nothing but, as you said earlier, owning the libs and just saying whatever the opposite is of what we're saying, which I don't know how anyone could possibly say, well, it's both sides acting equally crazy. And I still hear that. To this day, I still hear that despite everything that's happening. And the only thing I can think of, Marcos, beyond what I think is an excellent theory that you've put forth about these deplorables, is, you know, a nationwide nervous breakdown. I think there was just an American nervous breakdown where a significant portion of the now up to 73 million Americans just snapped. And I don't know how we can possibly come back from all of that. I mean, do we come back from this? Do they get snapped out of their stupor somehow?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I think two things can happen. One is, you know, if my theory is correct that they only turn out for Donald Trump, they'll disappear for a couple cycles until the next person learns how to, you know, reverse engineers Trump's appeal to them.
Interesting.
So we may get a little bit of respite. You have the just sort of demographic shifts, right? And the polite way of saying it is that these rural white people are exiting the electorate. Mm-hmm. Right? They're dying.
Yeah.
And in Texas, it's 80,000 white people die a year and 200,000 Latinos turn 18, right? I mean, that's the demographic reality of, And that's why Hillary lost Texas by 9 points last time. She lost it. Biden lost it by 6 points this time. It'll be 3 points in 4 years, and then boom.
Yeah.
And it might be accelerated, right? I mean, those changes, those shifts are happening. And the, again, this is very preliminary, but it looks very early on that Republicans have maxed out that white vote, that rural white vote. It's mm-hmm. pretty maxed out at this point, and we're nowhere near being maxed out on our core black, brown, and young people, young white people that trend our way, are still voting in lower rates than they have. And you know, young people, I think, how do they define young under 29? They voted at the highest rates ever this year, this November, yeah. And that was 55%.
Wow.
And that was mind-blowingly high for young people, 55%. Like, we still got the other half. And yeah. So that's a demographic that trends our way, right? So we still have a lot of work to do to sort of win, engage, activate our core base. I think they're not just maxed out, but they're also dying. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be shrinking moving forward. So that's the hope.
Yeah,
and you know, we saw it. Atlanta's or Georgia's a perfect example of how demographics in Arizona, right? These are two solidly conservative states that have flipped this year and are trending more in our direction. So it's not, you know, they're not. I don't see them as 50-50 states next in 4 years. I think they'll be +2, +3 points Democratic states. Still losable, but you know, the edge will be, you know, it'll be an edge Democrat. So that's a hope, but. Again, like I said, I think Minnesota is probably going to turn red at some point. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin's looking a little sketchy. Pennsylvania looks scary. Depends on how Philadelphia and Pennsylvania continue and Pittsburgh continue to grow. These are states, those old Rust Belt states that are losing population, are going to be very difficult for Democrats to hold.
Yeah,
going forward. And this is where you kind of hope that there is a shift in that solid Republican wall of you know, support with those older white rural people. And that's a tough one.
And you know, I know we're running late on time, but I have one last question for you, Marcos. Donald Trump's colossal hissy fit. How does this all play out between now and January 20th? I mean, what are you looking at in terms of the madness and how it manifests itself coming out of the White House?
So I think he's going to, I don't think they're going to have to drag him out. That would take something. But he has to keep the grift going as long as possible, right?
Yeah.
I think he has two goals right now. One is to fundraise, is to, you know, that money's going into his pocket, you know, a lot of it. So he wants that cash, and he's desperate. He owes, what, $400 million in the next 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have it. So he needs a grift as much as he can grift. So that's mm-hmm. a big part of it. And the second one is he really does think he's running again in 2024. And there's questions about whether, I mean, health-wise, he's not looking so great. So mm-hmm. I don't even know if he'll be healthy enough to run in 4 years. And then there's the issue of prison, which, you know, that's where I'm hoping he ends
yeah.
up in the next couple of years. But if he runs, again, he'll bring out those deplorables. So I do not want him to run again. I do not underestimate him ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Those him deplorables, love him. But for short term, he really needs to sort of keep up those pretenses that he's fighting. That's why they're filing those really ridiculous lawsuits, right, where it affects 500 votes.
Yeah, right.
And so they're ridiculous and stupid. But what they're doing is that they're using those to fundraise to their base. And their base is like, yeah, they were winning cases in Pennsylvania. Like, no, you're not winning them. And they, even if you did win them, it wouldn't matter. But they're not sophisticated. These are dumb people. You know, this is, of course, they're Republican for a reason.
Cause yeah.
They're dumb people. And so they're easy to fool. So you mm-hmm. have Rudy and, you know, in a basically are fake lawsuits. I mean, they're not even real lawsuits.
Right.
And it keeps the grift going, and it keeps this fiction that Donald Trump is never going to stop fighting for you.
That's right.
Sets them up for 2024. And so eventually states will certify, it'll be over. And I think at that point he'll declare that it was all stolen and head on to Florida.
That's right. Oh man. So much to look forward to, Marcos. Are you still, doing any road cycling?
Not right now. I broke my ankle a couple of years ago, and it was too hard to clip in and out. So
oh, man.
I shifted to weightlifting, and then my kids got older, and you know, going on 6-hour rides became a little
yeah.
but they're almost, they're getting to the point where they're, you know, my oldest is heading off to college next year. And then my youngest is only 3 years behind. So at that point, I think I'm definitely looking forward to getting back on a bike at that point.
Oh, that's great. It is so weird because I'm doing the same thing. I was bike riding for the longest time. I was riding about, 100 miles a week, something like that. I have since switched over to weightlifting. That's an incredible coincidence. Anyway, the website is dailycoast.com, as if I needed to even mention it. And of course, you can follow Marcos on Twitter at Marcos with a K in there. And Marcos, it's been an immense honor to talk with you today, my friend. Thank you so much for 18 years in the trenches. It has been absolutely invaluable.
So much fun. Thank you so much for inviting me, and thanks for your work.
Thanks. Take care, my friend.
Of America.
Talk to you next time.
Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The season of giving thanks is upon us right now. The special day of turkey, family, and football will be here before you know it. Before gathering with your family to share in your Thanksgiving traditions, it's important to allow some extra time for you. The time you need to take care of yourself and to look your best for your loved ones. With Plexiderm, all you need is 10 minutes and you can look 10 years younger. Plexiderm is a clinically studied serum that gives your appearance the right kind of changes, visibly reduced wrinkles, fine lines, and even under eye bags in just a matter of minutes. Plexiderm even works on laugh lines too. Numbers 11 and crow's feet. Take 10 years off your appearance in less than 10 minutes. We are talking about Photoshop in a can. You can try a 6-application trial pack for just $14.95 with free shipping when you visit buyplx.com/sexyliberal or call 800-685-1292 and say the code sexyliberal. This order also comes with free shipping and a 30-day money-back guarantee in case you don't like it. Make those wrinkles, lines, and under-eye bags disappear with Plexiderm. Visit buyplx.com/sexyliberal or call 800-685-1292 and say the code sexyliberal at checkout. Thank you.